Post-Hypnotic Press presents an unabridged recording of Childhood Under Siege, How Big Business Targets Children, narrated by Rebecca Jenkins. Introduction. I remember vividly one hot summer night in the early 1970s. I had escaped the cramped and humid hell of a Catskills bungalow. My extended family had met there for a vacation, and made my way to the teen glow ball disco at the big hotel down the road. Girls, a mystery to me, I was 13 at the time, had become intriguing over the previous year, and one of them on the dance floor caught my eye. After mustering the courage to ask her to dance, she said yes. I knew my luck was doubly blessed when a slow number came on. We embraced awkwardly and began to move together to the music. I thought I was in heaven. But suddenly the lights came on, the music stopped, and the glow ball ceased to glow. Two men, their necks craned and eyes squinting, made their way slowly to the middle of the dance floor. One of them, my father, had a flashlight tied to his head with a bungee cord. The other, short with bandy legs, knee-high white socks, and Bermuda shorts, was my Uncle Ben. Later that night, I would learn the two men had been dispatched by my panic-stricken family to track me down and bring me home when they realized I had gone missing. But at that moment, standing there stunned on the dance floor, my dark, adapted eyes stinging in the harsh, unwanted light, I knew I had to do something, and fast. I pulled my princess close, kissed her hard on the lips, a first for me, bolted the dance floor, and fled the hotel. When I hit the unlit road, I took a last look behind me. There I saw the strangest sight, a disembodied light bobbing eerily up and down, about 6 feet off the ground. It was, I realized, the flashlight attached to my father's head.
"It's me! I'm over here! I'm okay!" I shouted.
Now, for most kids, certainly for me that night in the Catskills, parents can be a real drag. Clueless, embarrassing, sometimes humiliating, overprotective, and always uncool. They make rules, curtail freedoms, spy and monitor, assign chores, require homework be done, limit computer use and TV watching, curb candy and soda consumption, forbid sex, alcohol, and drugs, impose curfews, and vet friends. Even young children, and certainly tweens and teens, understand that parents get in the way of fun. But, and this is the tricky part of it all, kids still want their parents to parent. Despite all the eye-rolling and door-slamming, they want parents to care about where they are and what they are doing, to care about them. My father had ruined my night and humiliated me, but even my snarky teenage self knew that as a parent, he was just doing his job. I hated what he did, but at some level, I felt cared for, even loved, by the fact that he had done something, however awful, did he really have to wear that flashlight on his head, to keep me safe. Parents, like my father that night, know their job is to keep kids safe, and to make sure they feel and are loved and cared for, protected. It is the most difficult job in the world. I should confess, I was not a model child. There was nothing innocent, idyllic, or calm about my childhood. I shot squirrels with BB guns, pelted cars with rocks, taunted trains for the sake of a thrill and a flattened penny, even blew up a small tree with a bundle of fireworks. I hung around the local drugstore plugging quarters into pinball machines and sneaking peeks at Playboys on the magazine rack. Later, as a teenager, I experimented with sex, drugs, and alcohol, played rock and roll, smoked cigarettes, drove cars before I got my driver's license. My friends and I would steal our parents' cars and drive them around town in the middle of the night, and attracted the ire of teachers, principals, and the police. I dismissed my parents' warnings and rules, they were so uncool, felt invincible, fashioned myself a rebel, and railed against anything that smacked of adult authority or sensibility. I made my parents' lives difficult with worry. "May your own children cause you as much grief as you've caused me," my mother frequently cursed. But I was just a normal kid doing the things kids, or at least some of them, normally do. Now, watching my own teenage kids grow up, a boy and a girl, each making good on my mother's curse in different ways, I remind myself constantly that this is how it goes. Childhood, the period between infancy and the end of adolescence, is not, and nor should it be, all purity and innocence. Dangers, sexual curiosity, fascination with violence and horror, and intrigue with adult vices are all normal parts of growing up, as are rebelliousness, moodiness, acting out, and the belief that parents, teachers, and other adults are clued out and unfair most of the time. So you will not find here a lament for youth's wayward ways, nor an ode to the lost innocence of childhood. Children, I believe, have stayed much the same over the generations, at least in terms of their essential needs and natures. They go through the same developmental stages, each with its own difficulties, confusions, dependencies, abilities, and vulnerabilities, and they require the same things from adults: love, protection, guidance, freedom, and respect. Parents, for their part, have also stayed much the same, profoundly, instinctively, and universally loving their children, cherishing, nurturing, caring, and hoping for them. And because childhood is a dangerous time, with children small, inexperienced, still forming and vulnerable, parenting can be as much about fear as it is about love. Indeed, the two are inextricably tied. Out of love, we cherish our children, wanting them to be safe, healthy, and happy, and to grow up into well-adjusted, productive, and life-loving adults. Out of fear, we worry about anything that might deny them these things. Knowing what to fear and what not to. The capacity to fear accurately, as psychoanalyst Erik Erikson described it in his landmark work, Childhood and Society, is key to good parenting and also to staying sane as a parent. But it is not always easy to do, especially when, as in today's media-saturated culture, new dangers to children or avowed denials of such are headline-grabbing news every day. Fearing accurately is made all the more difficult, and this is one of my central arguments, by the tendency of corporations and industries to incite and diminish fears in ways that serve their own purposes. Big business not only produces an inordinate amount of harm and danger to children, but also dictates the ways we fear or do not fear harm and danger. Whatever the issue, sex and violence in children's media, mental disorders among children, the ill effects of industrial chemicals on children's health, or failing schools, business interests, with the help of marketers, media, and public relations firms, craft information that creates and downplays fears in order to help sell products and justify harmful practices. The problem is further compounded by the fact the very institutions responsible for providing good and impartial information, government, science, medicine, and education, have, over the last few decades, come under industry's influence. As a result of all of this, I argue below, we as parents are systematically misinformed, and our fears channeled to serve the interests of industry and corporations rather than those of our children. My hope for this book is that it will provide a corrective to this tendency, that it will help us fear accurately for the fates of children, and thus enable us, both as parents and citizens, to better protect them from harm. I do not address every childhood issue, only those where for-profit corporations are centrally and directly involved in putting children at risk of harm. That is, however, a significant subset of issues, and one with profound and wide-ranging effects on children's lives. Needless to say, corporations are not the only culprits. Poverty, racism, sexism, neglect, violence, drug and alcohol abuse, exploitation, illness, and family dysfunction also undermine children's health and well-being. These factors are, in their broader dimensions, beyond the scope of this book, but I do examine their intersections with the book's core issues throughout. By way of a brief overview, then, subsequent chapters investigate the facts that a massive and growing kid marketing industry is targeting children with increased...